Imagine for a second that you live in a town where the house you're currently sitting in just went up in value by like nearly 4%.
Which is a great feeling, right?
Yeah.
You're checking your equity, feeling pretty good about things.
Exactly. You're feeling great. But then you look out your back window at an empty plot of raw dirt right there in your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And you find out that the value of that dirt just crashed by 70%.
Yeah. It's the ultimate economic paradox. I mean, honestly, it shouldn't even be mathematically possible in the same zip code.
And yet, it is happening right now. Welcome to the deep dive.
Glad to be here for this one. It's a wild ride.
It really is. So let's set the scene for you listening right now. It's late March 2026.
Finally.
Right. If you're driving anywhere across Texas today, the blue bonnets are, you know, they're just starting to peek out along the highways. The weather's actually deciding to cooperate for once.
Yeah, we're finally thawing out.
Easter is just around the corner, too. And traditionally, historically, anyway, this is the exact moment the spring real estate market wakes up from its winter hibernation.
It stretches its legs, yawns a bit, and then basically dictates the economic narrative for the rest of the year.
Right. And that spring awakening is exactly why we're doing this deep dive right now.
Because what happens between, say, late March and early June essentially locks in the trajectory for the whole housing sector.
Which is huge. I mean, that drives a massive portion of broader consumer spending and just general economic confidence.
Oh, absolutely. It's the engine.
So whether you're just casually tracking your home's equity or maybe you're an investor looking for where to deploy some capital.
Or if you're just fascinated by the sheer chaotic mechanics of the housing market.
Exactly. This deep dive is built specifically for you because we have a stack of incredibly rich, but also completely contradictory sources today.
Contradictory is definitely the word for it.
We're looking at the brand new February 2026 market update reports from the National Association of Realtors, the NENAR.
Right, the big macro picture.
And then we also have the localized reports from the North Texas Real Estate Information Systems.
And just a quick note for you listening, the industry pronounces that acronym NTREIS as Net Trends.
Net Trends. It sounds like, I don't know, a tech startup from Silicon Valley.
It does, yeah.
Yeah.
But it is literally the lifeblood of North Texas real estate data.
And on top of the NAR and NetTrains reports, we have some highly granular street-level data provided by Pete Realty.
Which is where things get really interesting.
So our core mission today is to cut through those national headlines. Because let's be honest, they're mostly designed to generate panic.
Panic or, you know, irrational exuberance.
Right. We want to uncover what the actual mechanics of the market are doing on the ground.
And we're going to do that by maintaining a hyper-focus on Parker County, Texas.
We're going to start from this 10,000-foot national view, look at the macroeconomic weather system, and then
right here all the way down.
Yeah, there should all the way down to a specific plot of dirt in Parker County.
Because if there's one thing this data proves, it's that macro numbers completely obscure micro realities.
You just can't price a home based on national averages?
No, you can't. The national news forces us into this this aggregated mindset, which is fundamentally flawed when you're dealing with something like real estate.
Because it's a non-fungible, highly localized asset.
Exactly.
Let's look at that global weather report first. According to the February 2026 NAR data, U.S. existing home sales dropped.
Mm-hmm. They declined 8.4%.
Right, down to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 3.91 million.
Which, just for context, is a 4.4% drop from exactly 1 year earlier.
Okay, we should definitely pause on that phrase, seasonally adjusted annual rate, or SAR, because I feel like that's a metric that always trips people up when they're reading the financial news.
Oh, for sure. I'm glad you brought that up.
Because, you know, if sales dropped 8.4%, but we're looking at an annual rate in a monthly report.
Yeah.
How do those two things actually reconcile?
Yeah. So the seasonally adjusted annual rate is essentially just an economic smoothing tool.
Okay.
Real estate is wildly seasonal. I mean, nobody wants to move their family in the middle of a blizzard in January.
Yeah. Right. Or pull their kids out of school in November.
Exactly. So raw transaction volume in the winter is always drastically lower than in the spring or summer.
So if we just looked at raw month-over-month numbers,
the market would look like it was crashing every single December and booming every May.
It would just be a heartbeat monitor of the weather.
Right. So economists apply a seasonal adjustment factor to the raw February data. They're estimating what the total sales for the entire year would be if every month behaved exactly like this February.
Factoring in its normal historical weight.
Exactly. So when the NAR says sales dropped 8.4% to a 3.91 million SAR, They're saying the underlying pace of transactions has decelerated significantly.
Even after giving February a pass for being a historically slow month?
Yes. 3.91 million is a very sluggish pace for a country the size of the U.S.
Okay, so the pace is sluggish. Transaction volume is undeniably down.
Down across the board nationally.
So if I'm reading a national headline, the takeaway is simple, right? The market is freezing up. People aren't buying.
That's what you'd think.
But here is the massive contradiction in that exact same national report.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to the median price of those homes?
Nationally, the median existing home price actually inched up.
It went up.
Yeah. It rose 0.9% year over year to $396,800.
Wow.
And according to the NAR, that is actually a new record high for the month of February.
Wait, I need to push back on this. Because basic high school economics suggests this shouldn't happen.
It feels wrong, doesn't it?
Yeah. Sales volume drops by over 8%. The transaction pace is sluggish. But the price of the asset hits a new historical high.
Mm-hmm.
If fewer people are buying and the transaction volume is shrinking, the rational assumption is that prices have to come down to entice buyers back into the market. How do prices go up when volume goes down?
Well, you're looking purely at the demand side of the curve. And you're right, demand has contracted. But price is the equilibrium point between demand and supply. And if we look at the supply side, the national housing inventory stood at 1.22 million units.
Which the report notes is actually up 3.4% from a year earlier. So supply is technically growing.
It is growing, yeah. But we have to look at the absorption rate. That 1.22 million units only represents a 3.7-month supply at the current sluggish sales pace.
Let's explain the months of supply metric for a second, because I feel like that's the linchpin of this entire pricing paradox.
It absolutely is. Months of supply simply measures how long it would take to completely sell out of all the current homes on the market.
Assuming not a single new home was listed.
Right. And assuming the current buying pace stays exactly the same.
Okay.
Historically, a balanced market where neither the buyer nor the seller really has a distinct negotiating advantage is considered to be a 6-month supply.
So at 6 months, you have enough inventory that buyers can be picky, but sellers aren't, like, totally desperate.
Correct. When you drop below 6 months, you enter a seller's market. When you go above 6 months, you enter a buyer's market.
And nationally, we're sitting at, what, 3.7?
A 3.7-month supply. So even though demand has pulled back and transaction volume is down 8.4%, the absolute number of homes available to buy is still structurally constrained.
It's just an issue of scarcity.
Profound scarcity. Even a reduced pool of buyers is forced to compete for an even smaller pool of acceptable inventory.
Which puts a floor under the prices.
Exactly. It's putting a concrete floor under national home prices. You have homeowners who locked in, say, 3% mortgage rates back in 2021.
Oh man, the golden handcuffs.
Yes, the lock-in effect. They're simply refusing to sell and take on a new 6.5 or 7% rate unless they are forced to by some major life event.
Like a job relocation or a divorce.
Right. So that starves the market of new listings, keeps the months of supply low, and forces the remaining active buyers to bid prices up, or at least keep them flat.
Which results in that $396,800 record high. It's fascinating because it completely breaks the traditional narrative of a crashing market. Volume can crash without prices crashing as long as inventory remains constrained.
Which is why you have to look at the full picture.
But this is exactly why looking at national data is like using a global weather average to decide what to wear today.
Right. Doesn't make sense.
If the global average temperature is 55 degrees, you might pack a light sweater. But if you live in Phoenix, you're going to be sweating through it.
If you're in Chicago, you're going to freeze.
Exactly. The national data says volume is down and prices are up, but you don't live in a national aggregate. You live in a zip code.
Which is the perfect transition to our regional data. If the national data is the global average, the Netrones data is the specific Doppler radar for North Texas.
And the radar is showing a fundamentally different climate, isn't it?
Completely different.
Let's pull up that Netrones data. What does North Texas look like compared to that constrained price appreciating national picture?
Well, the contrast is immediate. Mm-hmm. While national prices hit a new high, moving up 0.9%, the North Texas median sales price went the exact opposite direction.
It fell.
The median sales price in North Texas dropped 3.5% down to $356,000.
Wow. A 3.5% drop in median price is significant. We aren't just talking about a rounding error here.
No, not at all.
If you own a $400,000 house in North Texas, A 3.5% regional drop is a $14,000 hit to your perceived equity.
Just wiped out on paper.
And what about the supply side? The nation was starved at 3.7 months.
In North Texas, inventory is sitting at a 4.4-month supply. And what's really compelling about this figure is that it is perfectly flat year over year.
Flat? Like it didn't move at all.
It didn't move a single decimal point from last February. The change is exactly 0%.
So we have 4.4 months of supply, which is still technically below that balanced six-month mark you mentioned earlier.
It is.
So it's still technically a seller's market on paper, right? But prices are dropping 3.5%. If it's a seller's market, why are sellers losing their pricing power?
Because the market is stabilizing, but the velocity has fundamentally changed. We have to look at the metric known as days on market, or DOM.
Okay, what's the DOM doing?
In North Texas, the DOM increased by 6.9% to 77 days.
77 days.
Yeah.
So we're talking about 2.5 months from the moment you put the sign in the front yard, clean your house top to bottom, listed on the market, to the moment you actually secure a signed contract.
And remember, that is just to get the contract. You still have a 30 to 45 day escrow period after that before you actually close and get your money.
That is a staggering psychological shift. I mean, think about a seller who remembers the market from 2021 or 2022.
Oh, the glory days.
Right. Back then, you put a sign in the yard on Thursday, left town for the weekend, and came back on Sunday to 20 offers, all over asking price.
Buyers waiving inspections, waiving appraisal contingencies.
The DOM was practically measured in hours, not days. Now you're sitting there for 77 days.
Let's talk about the actual mechanics of those 77 days.
Mm-hmm.
Because it isn't just a waiting game, you know. It is a financial and emotional bleed out for the seller.
What do you mean by a financial bleed out?
Well, when you're sitting on the market for 77 days,
yeah,
you are making at least two, possibly three additional mortgage payments that you were probably hoping to avoid.
Right.
You're paying property taxes for an extra quarter of the year. You're paying insurance. You're keeping the utilities running at optimal temperatures so the house feels inviting during showings.
And psychologically, you're basically living in a museum.
Yes. You can't leave dishes in the sink. You have to constantly wrangle the dog and leave the house at a moment's notice for a showing that might not even result in an offer.
And as those days tick by, the buyer pool can see exactly how long your house has been sitting there.
Exactly. Days on market is a highly visible metric to every buyer. It's the ultimate leverage indicator.
So when a buyer sees a house sitting for 77 days,
they know the seller's getting tired. The urgency is entirely gone. They know they don't have to waive their right to a home inspection.
They know they can ask for concessions.
Right, like having the seller pay for a 2-1 interest rate buy-down.
Which brings us to a massive contradiction hidden deeper in this NetJerez report. And this is the part that genuinely had me stumped when I was reviewing the source material.
The affordability index.
Yes, the housing affordability index. I need you to break this down mechanically because the implications here seem massive.
It is. The housing affordability index is one of the most vital yet overlooked metrics in real estate economics.
Okay.
It essentially measures the relationship between median household income, the prevailing mortgage interest rates, and the median price of a home.
So it's synthesizing the three biggest variables a buyer faces.
Correct. It calculates whether a typical family earning the median income for their specific region earns enough to qualify for a standard mortgage on a median-priced home.
And it uses a baseline of 100, right?
Yes. The index uses a baseline value of 100. So 100 is the magic equilibrium number.
Got it.
An index value of exactly 100 means that a family earning the median income has exactly 100% of the income needed to qualify for that mortgage, assuming a 20% down payment.
So if the index is below 100?
Homes are structurally unaffordable for the average family. If the index is, say, 120, it means the median family has 120% of the income they need, meaning housing is highly affordable.
Okay, I'm tracking the math. Last February, the housing affordability index in North Texas was sitting at 92.
Which means the median family only had 92% of the income required. Structurally unaffordable.
But this February, looking at the brand new data, that index jumped 10.9%.
It crossed the magical threshold.
It did. It is now sitting 102.
That is a tectonic shift in the data. On paper, the North Texas housing market just transitioned from unaffordable to affordable for the median earner.
Okay, here's where I am completely stumped. And I'm going to push back on the behavioral logic here.
Let's hear it.
You're telling me that in North Texas, the median price of a home went down by 3.5%. And at the exact same time, housing affordability jumped by nearly 11%, crossing over that 100 mark so that the median income family can now theoretically afford to buy.
The math is undeniable. The combination of that 3.5% price drop, coupled with presumably some localized wage growth or slight rate adjustments during that specific window, it pushed the index up.
So if homes are suddenly more affordable and prices are down, why did pending sales in North Texas decrease by 6.4%?
Ah, there's the rub.
Pending sales, which represent buyers actively writing contracts, dropped to 8,748. If things are cheaper and people finally have the mathematical capacity to afford them, shouldn't that trigger a massive buying frenzy?
You would think so.
The gates are open. Why are pending sales shrinking?
That is the crucial gap between a spreadsheet and human behavior.
Right.
You're assuming that just because a buyer can afford a home, they will immediately execute the transaction. But real estate is not a perfectly rational, hyper-efficient market. It's deeply emotional. It's behavioral economics in action.
So what is the behavioral psychology of a buyer who finally crosses that 102 affordability threshold, but decides, nah, I'm not going to buy?
Think of it like a game of high-stakes poker, where the buyer and the seller are just staring across the table at each other.
Okay.
The buyer's been locked out of the market for 2 years. They finally have the chips to play. But they look at the board. They see that days on market has stretched to 77 days.
They see the 4.4 months of stable inventory.
Right. And they see the prices have already dropped 3.5%.
Oh, I see. They smell blood in the water.
Precisely. If you are a buyer and you see prices trending downward, your primary fear shifts from fear of missing out to fear of catching a falling knife.
Wow.
You don't want to buy a house today if you think it's going to be 3% cheaper in 6 months. So you sit on your hands, you wait, you wield your leverage, you know the seller is bleeding out financially day by day.
And we can actually see the exact outcome of this poker game in the data. There's another key metric in the NetJura's report, percent of original list price received.
Yeah, this is the capitulation metric.
Right now, sellers in North Texas are getting 93.3% of their original list price. That's down 1.2% from last year.
Let's contextualize that 93.3% for a second.
Please do.
If you're a seller and you list your home for $400,000, you are, on average, walking away with about $373,200. You are taking a nearly $27,000 haircut off your initial expectations.
That's a huge pill to swallow. Why does that happen? Why do they list at $400,000 if the market is only willing to pay $373,000?
Because of anchoring bias.
Sure.
Sellers anchor their expectations to the absolute peak of the market. They remember that their neighbor sold a similar house in 2022 for $410,000 in 3 days.
So they expect the exact same result.
Right. So they list at $400,000.
Yeah.
The 2026 buyer is looking at a 7% interest rate, not a 3% rate.
So the buyer refuses to bite.
Exactly. The house sits for 30 days. The seller does a small price reduction. It sits for another 30 days. The DOM stretches to 77.
And eventually the seller just hits a pain threshold.
Right. Maybe they already bought another house and are carrying two mortgages, or maybe they just can't stand keeping the house perfectly clean anymore. So they capitulate and they accept an offer that nets them 93.3%.
It's an incredible standoff. The affordability is there on paper, but buyer confidence is low and their desire for a deal is high. They want a discount, not just an affordable monthly payment.
And this dynamic dropping prices, sluggish pending sales, buyers waiting out sellers, is the established regional weather pattern for North Texas right now.
Which makes the next layer of our data completely mind-bending.
It really does.
Because if the North Texas region is seeing a 3.5% price drop and inventory is stabilizing, you would logically expect the counties within that region to generally reflect that reality.
You would assume the regional gravity applies to everyone.
Right. Maybe one county is down 2% and another is down 4%, but they should all be following the same cooling trend.
But the data from Pete Realty throws a massive reality-breaking curveball here.
We are zooming in from the North Texas region, specifically into Parker County. And Parker County is behaving like it exists in an alternate economic universe.
It is the ultimate market outlier in this data set. It completely defies the regional gravity.
Let's lay out the Parker County anomaly. We just established that North Texas as a whole saw median prices drop and pending sales drop. But look at the Parker County data. First, new listings in Parker County are up 4.9%.
Okay, so the supply of fresh inventory is growing. That's a relatively healthy indicator, but Usually, when supply goes up, if demand doesn't match it, prices fall.
Right. But here is where it deviates. Closed sales in Parker County are actually up 3.4%.
So transaction volume is increasing, completely counter to the national narrative where volume dropped 8.4%.
Exactly. And then the most shocking metric of all, the median sales price in Parker County is up 3.6%.
We really need to pause and let the math of that sink in for the listener.
It's wild.
The broader North Texas regional median price dropped 3.5%. Parker County's median price rose 3.6%. That is a 7.1% swing in performance compared to the surrounding regional environment.
It's a complete decoupling. If new listings, which represents new supply, are up almost 5%, basic economic principles tell us that adding more supply to a market should put downward pressure on prices.
Especially when the surrounding region is already experiencing price drops.
Why is Parker County doing the exact opposite?
To understand this, we have to look at the mechanics of desirability and structural demand. Now, our source reports from NetTrays and NAR, they focus purely on transaction metrics.
They don't give us the why.
Exactly. They don't provide demographic migration data or qualitative surveys asking people why they moved. But we don't need qualitative surveys. We can extrapolate the underlying cause based purely on the transaction math.
Walk me through that mathematical deduction.
It's a question of absorption velocity. When an increase in new listings, higher supply is met with a simultaneous increase in closed sales, higher transaction volume, and that collision still results in higher prices.
There's only one logical conclusion.
Right. The demand curve isn't just matching the supply curve. It is aggressively outpacing it.
Mm-hmm.
People are specifically targeting Parker County.
It's the VIP section analogy. Let's really break down the mechanism of how a VIP section works.
I love this analogy.
Think about a massive, incredibly popular restaurant. The main dining room represents the broader North Texas region. Currently, the main dining room is having a slow night. They've got open tables, people are lingering over their drinks, and the host is practically begging people to come in.
Offering discounts on appetizers, yeah.
Right. Prices in the main dining room are dropping.
The 3.5% regional price drop.
Exactly. But over in the back of the restaurant, there is a velvet rope. That's Parker County. And even though management keeps adding more tables behind the velvet rope, which is our new listings going up 4.9%, the line of people outside the club specifically demanding to sit in the VIP section just keeps getting longer.
The demand is inelastic relative to the rest of the venue.
Right. So the bouncer at the VIP section looks at the line, looks at the newly added tables, and realizes they still have more people than chairs. So what do? They raise the cover charge.
Closed sales go up because they are seating more people, but the price of entry goes up 3.6% because the exclusivity commands a premium.
It's crazy.
It's a brilliant way to conceptualize it. Regional economic weather systems do not distribute their effects evenly. While a buyer in Dallas or Tarrant County might be playing that patient poker game we talked about.
Looking at the 77 days on market, knowing the seller is bleeding.
Right, and demanding a 7% discount off the list price. The buyer, looking in Parker County, is facing a fundamentally different, highly competitive landscape. The velvet rope changes the psychology entirely.
Which perfectly validates the core mission of this deep dive. Local data is the only data that matters.
Absolutely.
Think about the real-world application of this. If you own a home in Parker County and you turn on a national cable news network, you hear an anchor say, existing home sales are down 8.4% nationwide. The market is stalling.
Or you pick up a regional business journal and the headline reads, North Texas home prices drop 3.5%.
Right. If you consume that macro data, you would rationally conclude that your local market is deteriorating. You might panic.
You might think, I missed the peak. My equity's evaporating. If I need to sell, I should probably list it for less than my neighbor did last year.
When the localized factual reality is that your specific county is seeing rising transaction volume and rising prices, you are sitting in a localized bull market that is completely surrounded by a regional stabilization period.
And if you price your home based on the national news, you are going to leave tens of thousands of dollars on the table.
You cannot manage a micro asset with macro data.
Never.
So Parker County looks like an unstoppable juggernaut on paper, defying gravity, defying the region. But what happens when we zoom in even further?
Because the beauty of this Pete Realty data is that we can go deeper.
We can always go deeper. the micro-realities always hide another layer of complexity.
This is where it gets genuinely wild.
They are going to parachute down from the county level into a specific city within Parker County, and we're going to look at a fundamentally different type of real estate asset.
And this is where the data doesn't just throw a curveball. It basically flips the entire poker table over.
This is perhaps the most profound lesson in market nuance in the entire data set. We are moving from macro to the regional to the local, down to the absolute granular micro data.
Let's look at Weatherford.
Weatherford is a key, highly desirable city located right in the heart of Parker County. But we are not going to look at single-family homes this time. We are going to focus specifically on the data for land sales, raw, undeveloped dirt.
And the contrast here is genuinely staggering. It almost defies belief until you unpack the mechanics behind it.
My brain short-circuited when I first read these numbers. I had to double-check the source report to make sure it wasn't a typo.
I don't blame you.
Let's compare February of 2025 to February of 2026 for raw land sales, specifically in the city of Weatherford. First, let's look at the transaction volume. Land sales technically went up. They went from 4 sales in February 2025 to 6 sales in February 2026.
A very small sample size, obviously, which makes the data inherently more volatile.
Yeah.
But still, a 50% increase in raw transaction volume.
Right. More pieces of dirt changed hands. But then you look at the price. Last year, the median price of land sold in Weatherford was $217,125.
Okay.
This year, February 2026, the median price of land absolutely cratered. It dropped to just $65,000.
That is roughly a 70% crash in the median price of closed land sales.
But wait, the absolute chaos of this data keeps going. Let's look at the inventory. Last year, Weatherford land had 7.7 months of inventory. A little bit buyer-friendly, sure, but relatively balanced for raw land.
Because land always moves slower and has less liquidity than a move-in ready house.
Exactly. But this year, inventory for Weatherford land skyrocketed to a staggering 17.2 months of supply.
Let's translate that into practical terms. That is nearly a year and a half of raw land supply sitting on the market, completely unsold, assuming the current buying pace remains steady.
And the days on market for this land stretched out to 165 days.
Wow.
So I need you to synthesize this massive paradox for me. How can Parker County's overall residential median price be up 3.6%, completely bucking the regional slump and proving immense desirability, but the median price of the actual dirt in its key city of Weatherford has crashed by 70%?
With a year and a half of surplus inventory just sitting there gathering weeds.
Right. Are people desperately buying houses, but absolutely refusing to buy the dirt underneath them?
This is where we have to fundamentally separate asset classes and understand how they are financed and consumed.
Okay, separate them how?
The overall Parker County numbers, the one showing robust health, a velvet rope VIP section, and rising prices are overwhelmingly driven by the residential home market. Existing move-in ready single-family homes.
The structures.
Right. The Weatherford land data suggests a totally different narrative playing out parallel to the housing market.
Two completely different realities existing in the exact same zip code, separated only by whether or not there is wood and brick sitting on top of the dirt.
Precisely. And the key to understanding this 70% price crash lies in the composition of what is actually selling.
The composition.
When we see median land prices drop from $217,000 down to $65,000, we're not necessarily seeing the exact same 5-acre parcel of land lose 70% of its inherent per acre of value.
Because that would be an apocalyptic economic collapse.
It would. Instead, we have to consider a shift in the type of land that is transacting.
Explain the composition shift. Who was buying the $217,000 land last year, and who is buying the $65,000 land this year?
Let's look at the financing mechanics. Buying a move-in ready home usually involves a standard 30-year fixed-rate residential mortgage. It's heavily subsidized by entities like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
It's relatively easy to get if you have good credit.
Exactly. But buying raw land, especially large parcels for development, requires commercial loans, construction loans, or massive amounts of pure cash.
And those loans are different.
Very different. Construction loans are generally short-term, adjustable rate, and carry significantly higher interest rates than residential mortgages.
So the cost of borrowing money to buy land is much more painful right now.
Exactly. So hypothesize what happens to a large-scale developer. Last year, they were buying massive $200,000 plus plots of land to subdivide and build neighborhoods. But as commercial interest rates remained elevated, and the carrying costs of holding land for 17 months became prohibitive, those big developers entirely pulled back from the market. They stopped buying.
So if the big developers stop buying the big expensive plots, who is left in the market?
Only the individual custom home builders or retail buyers looking for a small piece of dirt. They aren't buying 20 acres for $250,000. They're buying a quarter acre lot in an already developed subdivision for $65,000 to build a single custom home.
Oh, wow.
Right. If the only transactions that actually close are these small retail level lots, the median price of the data set will instantly crash to $65,000, even if the underlying per acre value of the land hasn't dropped by 70%. The mix of what is selling changed drastically.
That makes incredible sense. It's an illusion created by the median calculation.
Totally.
It's like if a car dealership normally sells Porsches and Hondas and their median sale price is $60,000, suddenly everyone stops buying Porsches and only buys Hondas, their median sale price might crash to $25,000.
The Porsches didn't lose their value, they just stopped moving off a lot.
Exactly. The composition of the sales shifted entirely to the lower end. Okay, I buy the composition argument for the price crash, but the inventory number, 17.2 months of supply.
Yeah, that's...
You cannot explain that away with just the mix of sales. That is a hard, undeniable metric of massive oversupply.
No, you can't explain that away. That metric is structural. It indicates that raw land in Weatherford is currently a buyer's absolute paradise.
It is a highly illiquid market.
Extremely. If you are a buyer looking for a lot to build your dream home in a few years, you have unprecedented leverage right now. You have 17.2 months of options to choose from. You are negotiating against sellers who have been sitting on the market paying property taxes on empty dirt for an average of 165 days.
You hold every single card in the deck.
Every single one.
While at the exact same time, if you want to buy an existing move-in ready house in the exact same town, you are fighting in a highly competitive, appreciating VIP market where prices are up 3.6% and inventory is tight.
It is the ultimate tale of two asset classes. And just to highlight how chaotic, hyper-local, and completely disconnected these micro-markets can be from one another, let's briefly look at another city included in the localized data, Ozel.
Ozel, Texas, another local city in the immediate area.
Look at their raw land data. Ozel only had a single land sale in February 2026. One transaction.
One piece of dirt.
And their inventory is actually even higher than Weatherford's. Ozel is sitting at 18.7 months of raw land supply.
So an even bigger glut of land than Weatherford and practically zero liquidity. Only one person bought dirt.
Right. You would assume, with 18.7 months of supply and zero demand, that the seller of that one property must have taken an absolute beating on the price just to get outright.
That's what the logic dictates. Supply is infinite, demand is non-existent. The buyer should have dictated the terms.
But look at the list price received metric for Ozel land. In February 2025, sellers of land in Ozel were getting hammered, accepting only 71% of their original list price. But this year, in February 2026, despite having 18.7 months of inventory, that single sale achieved 92.3% of its list price.
Wait, so Weatherford has a 70% median price crash and 17 months of inventory. Ozel has almost 19 months of inventory, zero transaction volume, but somehow the sellers suddenly recaptured 20% of their pricing power.
It is total statistical chaos. When transaction volumes drop to a sample size of one, the data completely unmoors itself from macroeconomic theory. It becomes highly idiosyncratic.
Because it's just one human interaction.
Exactly. Maybe that one lot in Ozel was next to a lake. Maybe the buyer was a relative of the seller. We don't know. But what we do know is that the micro markets are entirely disconnected from each other. They aren't even reading the same book, let alone the same page.
Which brings us to the most practical, actionable part of this deep dive.
The application.
If you are a property owner trying to gauge your equity, or a prospective buyer trying to find an entry point, or just an intensely curious learner trying to wrap your head around the mechanics of the economy, what do you actually do with this labyrinth of contradictory data?
Because having access to raw data is not the same thing as possessing insight. Data without expert interpretation is just noise.
And in the world of real estate, acting on the wrong data or misinterpreting the right data can literally cost you tens of thousands of dollars.
Let's talk about the danger of algorithmic smoothing. We all use those automated home value estimates on the big real estate websites, the Zestimates of the world.
Sure, if everyone checks those.
Those algorithms are largely built on macro and regional data smoothing. They take a massive set of variables and try to build a predictable curve.
And algorithms hate anomalies. They try to flatten them out to make the model work.
Exactly. So if you own a single-family home in Parker County, and you just casually pull out your phone and check an automated real estate app. The algorithm's regional data weighting might tell you that your home has lost 3.5% of its value over the last year.
Simply because that's what the broader North Texas region did. The algorithm applies the regional weather to your local street.
It smooths out the Parker County velvet rope anomaly. It assumes you are in the main dining room, not the VIP section.
Or, conversely, if you own a 10-acre plot of raw land in Weatherford and you looked at the raw city averages without understanding the underlying composition of the sales, you might have a full-blown panic attack thinking your retirement asset is suddenly worth 70% less than it was last year.
This is why localized human experience is the ultimate irreplaceable filter. We mentioned earlier that the highly granular street-level data sources we use today were compiled to showcase the expertise of David Peet, an agent at Peet Realty.
The source notes specifically highlight that David has over 10 years of experience navigating these specific counties. And honestly, looking at the sheer chaos of this data, the 77 DOM, the 93% list price retention, the asset decoupling, I finally understand why that specific timeline, 10 plus years of experience, matters so crucially right now.
Let's unpack the timeline of a real estate agent. Why does a decade matter more in 2026 than it did in 2021?
Think about what the market has done over the last 5 years. If you are a real estate agent who got their license during the pandemic boom, say, anywhere from 2020 to 2022, your entire foundational understanding of the market was forged in a historical anomaly.
You've only ever known a market where houses sell in 72 hours.
You've only known a market with 20 competing offers, all of them $50,000 over the asking price. You only know a world where buyers willingly waive all their rights to inspections and appraisals just to win the bid.
It was a transaction facilitation market, not a negotiation market.
Exactly. A pandemic-era agent has never had to navigate a market with 77 days on market. They don't have the muscle memory for it. They've never had to sit down at a kitchen table and have the brutal, emotionally fraught conversation with the seller to explain why their house isn't moving.
Why their anchoring bias is wrong.
And why they are going to have to accept 93.3% of their list price.
That is a very astute observation about professional muscle memory. A newer agent has never had to market a piece of raw land in Weatherford that is sitting in a 17.2-month inventory glut. They don't know how to find the custom builders.
Right.
They don't know how to suggest subdividing a parcel to increase liquidity. They simply don't have the tactical negotiation skills required when the buyer actually holds all the leverage.
Experience is the algorithm that decodes the anomalies. A computer algorithm can't tell you why Weatherford land crashed while Parker County homes surged. It just spits out the terrifying median number and adjusts your net worth on an app. A decade of local, boots-on-the-ground experience allows an expert to look at that 70% price drop and say, don't panic. The big developers stopped buying because construction loan rates are too high, but custom home buyers are still looking for quarter-acre lots. We need to subdivide your land, change the zoning, or market it differently.
The human element contextualizes the data.
Mm-hmm.
It turns noise into strategy.
So the takeaway for you, the listener, is paramount. Whether you are prepping for a meeting with a financial advisor, looking to invest your own hard-earned capital, or just trying to give sound, rational advice to a friend who is stressing out about selling their house, the lesson of this data is clear.
Macro data provides the weather system. It tells you if it's generally a hot summer or a cold winter for the economy. It gives you the baseline interest rate environment and the national mood.
But local expertise provides the umbrella. It tells you if it is actually raining on your specific street. It tells you if your house is in the VIP section or if your land is sitting in an illiquid desert. You cannot navigate a localized asset without localized context.
You need someone, or you yourself need to cultivate the ability to look at the dirt beneath the data.
Which brings us to the end of our deep dive today. We've gone from the 10,000-foot national view of 3.91 million sales all the way down to a single dirt lot sitting unsold for 165 days in Weatherford, Texas. But, as always, we never like to leave you without a final thought to chew on.
We want to leave you with a provocative question, something that connects all these disparate, chaotic threads we've been untangling for the last hour.
Living at home.
Let's go all the way back to the regional data. We established that the North Texas Housing Affordability Index just crossed back over the magic 100 mark. It now sits at 102.
Mm.
What that means, fundamentally and mathematically, is that a massive wave of median income buyers who have been sidelined and frustrated for years can suddenly afford to enter the market on paper.
They finally have the financial capacity to buy. The gates are open for the median earner, I'm tracking.
But we also established that Parker County is the highly desirable VIP section of the region, where prices are already rising and where supply is relatively tight compared to the surging demand.
Right. Parker County is where people want to be.
So as we head deeper into this 2026 spring market, the blue bonnets are out. People are cashing their tax returns. The Easter egg hunts are happening, and the traditional buying season awakens. What happens when that new massive wave of newly qualified affordability index one or two buyers decides they all want to live in the VIP section?
Oh, man.
What happens when this pent-up, mathematically qualified demand collides with Parker County's already appreciating supply-constrained housing market?
That is a fascinating collision. Do those 77 days on market suddenly vanish as the new buyers flood in? Does that capitulation metric, where sellers are only getting 93.3% of their list price, suddenly shoot back up to 100% because multiple offers return to Parker County?
You very well might. The velvet rope might get even tighter.
Nope. But... Or, and this is the really wild thought, do those newly qualified buyers look at the rising prices of Parker County residential homes, realize they are still getting priced out of the existing move-in ready housing stock despite the affordability index, and suddenly pivot their strategy?
Where would they pivot?
Do they look at that massive 17.2-month oversupply of raw land sitting right there in Weatherford? Do they look at that 70% median price discount on dirt, look at the lack of residential inventory, and say, you know what, let's bypass the housing market entirely. Let's just buy the dirt at a massive discount, hire a custom builder, and build it ourselves.
Will the micro crash in the raw land market become the ultimate release valve for the macro surge in housing affordability?
That is the multi-million dollar question. Will the buyers eat up the dirt to solve the housing crisis? It is exactly why you have to keep tracking the data, keep questioning the simplistic national headlines, and never, ever settle for the aggregated average when your highly complex, highly volatile local reality is sitting right there waiting to be understood. Thank you for taking the deep dive with us today. Keep your eyes on the dirt, and we'll see you next time.